This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Outdoor Edge in their complete lineup of knives and game processing kits. These guys right now are doing an absolutely huge giveaway where you could win an elk hunt, and not just any elk hunt. We're talking about a 7 or 8 mile horseback ride into the backcountry. We're talking a one-on-one guided hunt. You're going to be sleeping in a wall tent, and you're going to be doing that for 5 days with the founder and CEO of Outdoor Edge, David Block. Now, if you've never been on an elk hunt before, I'm telling you right now, go sign up for this, because if you ever hear a elk bugle, whether it's at 400 yards or it's at 40 yards, it is a life-changing experience. So here's how you enter. Go to OutdoorEdge.com. There's going to be a big banner for it somewhere on their homepage. All you have to do is click on that. Go fill out some information. I think your name, your email address, maybe some other stuff. And that's all you have to do. That's how you are entered. They're going to be picking a winner, a ways from now. So you have plenty of time to enter. Go visit OutdoorEdge.com. Sign up today. And if you decide to purchase any products from the website, enter the discount code NATION30. That's the word NATION with the number 30 after that. No spaces. NATION30. And you will receive 30% off your purchase.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
All right, welcome back, guys. Oh, man, right in the middle. It's the end of October, getting towards the end of October. Matt and I are once again in the outdoor studio, long story short, or if you want to know what the outdoor studio looks like, it's in my backyard next to the fence where all the leaves get blown up in a whirlpool of wind. So here we are.
Protected from the wind today.
Trying to be a little bit.
As we can.
Today definitely feels like one of those days we kind of were like, all right, if fall is here.
This is
chilly.
Fall. This
Matt
is
and I have,
fall.
I've got flannel on. He's got a
sweatshirt.
Sweatshirt,
vest.
Yep.
It's, and, what, 58 maybe? It's a high,
yeah.
Windy, damp.
And so, you know, let's talk deer. A lot of the year we talk habitat. We're talking deer today.
Not only deer, but successful deer hunts.
Successful deer hunts. And we got our good friend. I don't even know what to say. Team member, but not really, because we are getting a team of guys, a lot of clients that are going to be filming with us. But Seth has been with us from almost the very get-go. And we got Seth back on the line. Seth, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
You've been on the podcast now probably half a dozen times, if not more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so, if not,
probably
if not more.
Probably next to my brother, the most reoccurring guest we have.
Yep.
So there you go, Seth. Feel honored.
Always a pleasure.
You made it.
Always a pleasure.
We do that so we know we can guarantee two or three listeners every week with your with your wife and
yep.
and so we just try to add our yeah. female audience out there. So anyway, man. Thanks for coming on. Now let's jump right in. We've been following along YouTube channel, guys, listeners. If you haven't started over on our YouTube channel, please go over there, check it out, subscribe to our channel. We are dropping more and more videos each week.
And there's already 90 plus videos on the YouTube channel. Plus, I mean, it's weekly, if not bi-weekly right now with the amount of videos that are done, ready to post.
Yeah. So Land and Legacy, search it. It's the and sign. I'm not sure if you could find it with typing out and. I'm sure you could.
You can.
So check it out on YouTube. We're not posting them on our Facebook handle much anymore. It's just all on YouTube. So go and subscribe, please, to help support us. That is the direction we are headed more and more with. You're not going to get more podcasts out of us anytime soon. You already get two a week. So tough up if you want
yes.
more of that.
Here's your videos.
You get videos. More fun to do. So we just released Trace.
Mm-hmm.
Trace's deer kill. For you guys, so you can go and watch that one. We have not covered that on the podcast, but we have released that one.
Well, Seth covered the story of Hefty, but haven't discussed, let's
That's
say,
right.
the release of the video.
That's
but,
right.
But Seth and I went into long detail about the story of Hefty, and you can see all that footage. Seth laid down some really good footage, and most times, like with a mature buck, it's kind of quick hunt, not this long drawn out deal, but that certainly was a story with this hunt. So lots of footage, and Trace walloped this deer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. that was a long, never had that happen. May not ever have that happen. That was like 10 minutes of.
We got to get that boy some lighted knocks though.
Yeah, we're going to do that. That's
first
that's
world problems, right?
Yes.
When we're griping about, oh, I shot him, killed him, but he didn't use a lighted knock.
Yeah.
You know,
it's so much easier to tell where the impact is with that light of knock, especially on video.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, you can see so much better.
Oh, for sure. Light of knocks are kind of one of those things you don't realize how awesome they are until you don't have it.
Well, I mean, even if you're reviewing footage or watching footage on YouTube, this and that, they're awesome. But even just for the hunter themselves of, hey, okay,
oh, yeah.
I can see
oh,
them.
Yeah.
Okay, was it a pass-through? Are they carrying that light knock? And then the light knock can help light up a blood trail if you're off of it, if that arrow comes out later on, or if it stays in them. Heck, then you see it down the field
yeah.
or in the woods, wherever it's sticking straight up. There, you know, there's a lot of benefits to just having that extra lighted knock in there.
Right. Yeah, very few times you're gonna lose your arrow.
We're just recovering your dagger.
You go back
arrow.
That night, obviously, if you've got the lighted knock.
Did you get a full pass through?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Yes, I mean it passed through and into the ground.
What kind of broadhead is he shooting?
Six broadhead, a two, which we experimented with broadheads with him, and anyways, we finally arrived at the six, the fixed blade. Just it's a two blade with bleeder blades. They would call it a four blade, but the other bleeder blades, I don't know if you could consider those blades or not. But Gotcha. Basically a two-blade with bleeders.
How much is he pulling? What's his draw weight?
He is pulling 50 pounds now. He was 40.
That's what Matt's pulling.
With the 26-inch draw.
He was 47 last year, 46. But,
gotcha.
And what I've done with him when we're out shooting, just for all those guys that shooting with their sons, if you guys shoot two or three times a week with your sons, if you'll just take it and just crank it a half a turn once a week, you'll be surprised. They'll start pulling 50, and they'll never know it. You'll never know it.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of what we've done. And before you know it, they're pulling higher poundages.
Gotcha. Well, so Hefty's Hunt is on the YouTube channel, and soon this podcast will release around the 20th. Release on the 20th.
Yep.
The 20th of October, and I'm hoping that the YouTube video hits around the 20th. I would hope that night, but it may be a day or two before it hits the YouTube channel. So this whole podcast will kind of go with that video if you want to watch this podcast transfer into video format from MP3 to MP4.
Whoa.
So, yeah, let's talk about the buck. What's the story on the buck?
Okay, so Geronimo, I think the story with him, and the whole story overall, it's kind of one of those bittersweet stories, because that's how it always is when you fill your bow tag early, if you will. As if you're listening in Missouri, our season starts September 15th and ends January 15th. So I kill, September 27th, 28th, something like that. So I've got a long time till I have another buck tag come in play. Not only that, I'm going to miss some fine bow hunting in the rut. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm tickled to be able to wrap my tag around Geronimo, but with that being said, it's almost bittersweet. But I think the story with Geronimo is targeting him early on and learning about him relentlessly through the summer. And it was just one of those deers that I got to stay with. And I put the pieces together, which, interestingly enough, and another probably take home, is this deer crossed before I got to take the shot on him. He crossed a major highway. And I think a lot of people in terms, they try to put lines out there, whether it be a river or a highway or whatever that may be. And they're like, well, that, you know, their mind just stops at the deer crossing the highway or the deer crossing the river. And that's exactly what I figured out in the summer that the silly thing was doing. In fact, I believe that the deer was actually bedding where and watching traffic go by this major highway. I mean, I think he was bedding within distance of the highway. So the story with Geronimo started way back in early velvet season, and I noticed big bases on a deer and one just large broad or a brow tine coming off the right side. And I was like, man, that looks like a really nice deer. And I couldn't tell exactly who the deer was yet. There was no ear feature or double throat patch, or I just wasn't sure who the deer was. And I was like, man, I think that's going to be a mature deer. And as time went on, he just kind of developed into a really nice deer. And not only that, I just started putting the pieces of the puzzle together. He did disappear, like they do during, velvet shedding time. I mean, he went AWOL. And I wasn't sure where he went. I wasn't sure, if it was going to be one of those deer that I wasn't going to see again. So it was really for him. We talk about hunting deer, and I think a lot of people think about that hunting time is during season, but that's not necessarily the case. The hunting for Geronimo was the off-season period. I was just setting and waiting on that deer. I had already done all the hunting all those months prior, putting pieces together on him. So I think
you
it was preparation.
Matt, you know, when you say that, you and Matt sat on the bottom field a couple of nights or one night, or you guys went and glassed, sitting in the truck or sitting on the fields trying to glass and spot this deer, right?
Yeah, we did. We made a few stabs at Geronimo, and we did set, and we very well may. I don't know, Matt. We never did really look at that footage on. We had those deer that crossed the creek.
That's true.
That very well. One of those could have been Geronimo.
Yeah. No, that's nowhere from a distance wise of movement and travel summer to actually where you killed him, where we started hunting very early season at. It easily could have been spotted there that night.
Yeah, we may have the footage of him. We saw several nice deer when we were scouting Velvet. And that was the deal with Geronimo. The whole thing with him, which was the toughest thing to figure out, was whether he was bedding basically back to the north. We've got a large pine plantation and a clear cut, or back to the south, which is again is across the highway. That was the main thing, trying to put the pieces together. And what was throwing me at, I knew he was feeding in this bottom food plot, and early in the season a lot of my picks down there would be daylight. And I'm like, man, he is right here somewhere. Where in the world is he? Which direction is he coming from? And then finally, we started pegging him on the camera a couple of times back to the north, or south, rather, which, as you guys well know, is a track we call the 360, which the highway separates the two tracks.
Right.
So we started putting pieces of the puzzle together. And now it was make a game plan to kill him. And I think in recent times, we've always talked about being conservative and hunting around the edges and things like that. And primarily, that's what we were doing. You know, I was tiptoeing around basically where we thought the deer was going to bed, and actually trying to intercept him the first couple of times. Before he ever made it to this big bottom field. And, you know, doing what whitetail hunters do, he's bedding here at A, and he's headed to C. Where can I intercept him at B? Seems like to be a really good ingredient for success, but we actually harvested him at C this particular time, which is really amazing. Not only is it amazing that he crossed a major highway, what's even more amazing is that all the traffic that was coming by as he was making his entry in, and not only him, my gosh, I saw three or four other mature bucks, one that is 7 years old plus.
Oof.
I mean, One-Eyed Jack, we've known him forever. You get the trail camera pictures of One-Eyed Jack. He's got that low glow in one eye. He's always had a forked horn on the other side and just a big four-point sight on the other side. Old specimen. And, I mean, he was coming down there too. You know, and he was actually coming back from the north as well. And then we had Dove Creek 10. He came through in the footage, which is a really – he's an old specimen too, actually downhill by probably 7 to 10 inches than what he was last year. And he's another old specimen. So that's what's interesting. Highway, deer cross the highway. Dove Creek 10 crossed the highway too. You know, so all these things we're combating with. And, you know, we just made it come together all that preseason scouting, A number one, is what killed that or let us harvest that deer. You got to put in the time, and that's what it's about.
You know, the preseason scouting, you know, you're sending trail cameras back and forth, and, you know, like I said, you're strategizing or just bouncing ideas off of us. So like, okay, he's here, he's there. What do you think? Blah, blah, blah. But I think one of the kind of key ingredients that helped to make this hunt possible is your ability or to basically decide that it's worth the juice is worth the squeeze to go in and scout, let's say, that area C that you mentioned earlier, right? Because this fall, there's a lot of black oak acorns. And they started dropping pretty early. And that's really what sealed the deal. And you had a food plot you were close to hunting. But a lot of deer were crossing that highway on this main drain that was loaded with black oaks and dropping consistently. But despite being, let's say, in season, you went in and scouted an area because you knew it was, let's say, within the epicenter. You know, what's the other resources that are pulling deer here to make this happen? When I think a lot of people are like, okay, it's season, I can't move anywhere on this farm but between where I park and where my tree stand is. But truthfully, if you have a season that opens up, let's say, September time frame and moves through January, the food sources change so drastically. And I think as a hunter, we have to weigh in like that, the value of, let's say, finding that resource. We can know typically where those are at. And if we're relying solely on food plots, well, we know exactly where they're at. We planted them. But here we've got so many oak trees that produce some years and some they don't. A lot of scouting went in ahead of time to identify this deer and the range, but like to put the actual X on the map of like, this is where it's going to happen, took that additional scouting to make it pull together.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that is by far, I mean, that was the key ingredient that brought Geronimo into bow range was red oak acorns. We're slack on the white oak and we're heavy on the red, and that, like you mentioned, that drain. I wasn't sure they were falling, but the first night, I mean, that was my second night in that set, and that drain, I mean, they were coming down, they were feeding. And not only that, I'll tell you what probably led me to that more than anything was, for whatever reason, the turkey flocks. I would notice them coming in and out of there on the camera, and I'm like, what in the world are they? They're never over there. Why, you know, why are they over there? And anyways, they were right with the deer, obviously. And a lot of guys, I've got one great friend, big white tail killer. I mean, he's killed more deer than EHD. He's just a, he's a killing machine.
That's a new one.
And I'm telling you, he's told me he hunts big woods. He hunts where they're hard. He hunts a lot of government tracks. Well, he's in Douglas County. You guys know all about that. And yep, there's parts of Douglas County that are just loaded with big, heavy timber. And he's told me a lot of times you can follow those turkeys. You follow those turkeys and they will show you a lot of times where the native food is. And those turkeys or the deer are smart. A lot of times they'll scratch the leaves out of the way and the deer will come back in behind and pick the acorns up or whatever. So the turkeys kind of led me to, I'm like, why are they using that drain over there? What are they doing over there so much? And you'd drive down the road and I'd look out in the creek. We're really dry right now and there'd be flocks of turkeys out there. And I'm like, what in the world? Well, I mean, it was just, that was just a little island of acorns for whatever reason. We're in a drought. I don't know if it was just a little sweet spot or what, but it definitely had acorn production. So that is what was making him cruise through, because our food plot down there wasn't necessarily fabulous because of the drought. There was value in it, but I think it was a combination there of the native acorn production as well as what food plot we did have that was growing in the dry time that we're at. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of being out there living with the deer and actually being able to put the pieces together. That is definitely what we attributed that deer to. And I know a lot of guys listening, they don't get a lot of time to hunt.
Yeah.
A lot of them have, you know, they're a slave to their job and they've got families, they've got kids, so they get a select time to hunt. Most everyone tries to take the rut. And if I were to say, and I'm putting myself in that situation, I'm my own business owner, so I do have a little bit more leeway, but I'm sitting there thinking, if I didn't, what would I do? And I think that would be, I would spend more time if I have a good early season opener where you can pattern a deer. I think I would spend a lot more time trying to figure out if I could make my early season successful. And if you're getting on a pattern where you're putting pieces together and you have the ability to take that vacation early or something like that, it may be the time to do it, because I'll tell you what, I have had some awesome last week. I've killed a lot of nice deer that last week of September. You can really get a pattern on them. And sometimes, as you well know, what happens in the rut, some farms, the deer are not a traditional rut farm. People lose deer. And you know what? They're over on the neighbors, the deer that you were watching all summer, and then you've taken your vacation off in the rut, he's not there anymore.
Yeah.
He's moved to a different area that they rut in. I mean, they just do that. So if you're on a pattern on one and, you know, you put the pieces together and it traditionally your camera is really blowing up when the season's opening, I mean, man, go in there and try to get them. If you're gathering that much information, you could be successful.
How many times a week do you think you had pictures of Geronimo?
Man, I was getting him, and as velvet was really coming on, I mean, you're talking every day I was patterning him.
Gotcha.
Every day. There wasn't a day that went by. Obviously, there's something that trips in them, as you know, you read a lot and we talk a lot, but they say the testosterone goes up and there, I mean, something definitely happens. A switch flips, you know, and it starts to get less and less and less, and they're harder to pattern. They just are. As it gets to that time, they're tough, but man, I was getting them every day.
Over the last 2 weeks, let's just say from when you killed him to the opening September 15th. So 12 days. How many times did you have him on camera during those 12 days, you think?
Once. So in the bottom, once. There was 2.5-3 weeks where I killed him in the bottom. I had him once.
And that's the testament there, Seth, is what you kind of bringing what you said earlier back into this conversation of staying on a deer. You had a lot of intel from the summer, right, of where he's doing, what he's doing, but you're also using the knowledge of the resources available that's dropping at that time, watching other game. It's not just, you know, mature bucks going to this acorn, you know, this draw that's loaded with acorns. There's a bunch of deer and turkeys, and so you're observing all that, and then you get one picture in 12 days, but you're still on this deer. And I think a lot of people probably would have just given up and said, well, I'm not getting pictures of him. He's not worth hunting. He's not moving during daylight hours. Well, that's not true at all. You know, this deer was moving during daylight hours. You just need to be where you needed to be and where he was moving. You can't kill him if you're not where he's at or where he's going to be.
Oh, yeah. And I think we make that mistake a lot. I mean, you know, and again, it goes back to, obviously, I mean, I'm going to be the first one to tell you that if I haven't had the history with hunting whitetails on the property that I hunt, that outcome may have been different and I may have thought the deer, you know, he's gone.
Sure.
But I've gathered enough information over the last several years. I kind of know what they do, or I kind of know what I think they do. And I know the habitat is fabulous. I know the habitat is great. And I know that typically deer that range in that range that I was tagging him with in the summer, they typically don't leave. You know, it takes in all honesty, to get a deer in front of your camera without the aid of bait or a scrape or something of that nature, you're not going to get pictures every day. And
no.
I quit baiting, feeding. Obviously, in Missouri, we have to quit 10 days. And I did quit feeding. We feed our deer heavy, but I quit feeding. So what do you guys think that does to my pictures? They go down.
Oh, yeah.
So I quit at the normal time that you're supposed to, make sure it's all gone. Your pictures go down, and then you're just relying on past information and those cameras on trails, scrapes, food plots. A lot of times what would happen when you get them in a food plot, a doe will trigger it, and you'll look out there and you'll be like, I'm pretty sure that's him. You can see the frame, and you're like, well, yeah, that's got to be him.
Yeah.
So,
right.
You know, it's.
What about?
It takes a lot to get a deer in front of a camera every day.
It does. What about last year's history? Did you have much history with him last year?
I do. You know, the deer is going to be four, possibly five. We're not sure where he's at. I don't know about you, but for me, there's a lot of deer. That I'm like, is he four or is he five? Four and five really seems like a hard age.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to sit here and argue with you. That deer's four, that deer's five. I'm going to sit here and be honest with you. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've shot a handful of deer that I don't know. Were they four or five?
Yeah. And why does it even matter? I don't think it does.
And why does it even matter? I mean,
but my question for you is on the history is, last year, did he ever, you know, we had a pretty good white oak acorn crop last year, if I remember right. I think you did. Did you ever remember him shifting in late September and going down to that bottom field much?
No, he had a complete pattern shift. He was actually completely on the south side of the 360. And I actually have... I think I have a snippet of it. It took me a minute to figure out who he was. And he did put on several inches, actually. But I do have just a little bit of history with him. And I tell you what happened. I knocked out a big buck, and we've talked about this, or I have for sure with you guys. I knocked out a big buck we called Dirty Harry on the back of the 360. And it was wild. And this deer, and I think we did a podcast on Dirty.
We did. Yep.
I knocked him out, and that again, that deer was a wild deer. He was just off the charts, aggressive. He had a home turf, and when I knocked him out, it was wild. This deer here, Geronimo, who I believe he was, he moved in and increased his home range on this particular piece of property, him with another deer, automatically when I knocked him out. And I think that goes for a lot of places of better habitat. If you knock out a big mature deer, and there are a lot of big mature deer in the area in good habitat areas, I think you're going to have other guys come in and say, hey, this place is awesome. I really like it. Habitat's great. There's plenty of does. It's comfortable. And I believe that's really what happened with him. We knocked Dirty Harry out. It made an opening for him. And Dirty Harry wasn't in there to beat his head in the ground. So he started kind of moving in. As soon as I knocked him out in late December, he just kind of started just shifting in, and his range just kind of just eased right in. And my gosh, he moved almost to the center of the two properties, which is the middle of the highway.
Gotcha.
And he just kind of made it his home range, and him with a handful of other ones.
So there wasn't any history. You know, sometimes we kill deer based on past year's history, travel patterns and things that they've done in the past. Yours was very much
fresh,
going, okay, he was on the bottom field. And this year, especially because of the fact of...
This year, it was so fresh. Again, that's why I was saying it was bittersweet. there is nothing more rewarding in the whitetail world than gathering information for years on end and having a good test match with one and killing him a couple years later or 3 years later. It makes it so much, I don't know, you just can't explain it. You know, you worked hard, so much more rewarding, I guess, is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But with Geronimo, it was, and I gathered the intel all through the summer and closed the deal very, very quickly. Had snippets of him last year, December on through, tried to find a shed or two of him. And then he actually just moved into the home range. So there was only about knowing him about a full year, probably. I had a few pictures of him where he'd kind of came in onto the 360 a couple of times last year, but
he wasn't a regular customer.
He wasn't a regular customer over there. And there again, I think there was some other deer competition, and we just made a spot for him to come in.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
So,
well, then, too, like, knowing once he, let's say, sealed a deal, air quoting this, became a permanent resident, right? You know the farm, though, from history, scouting, not, you know, during off season, but just knowing where the resources are from good thermal beddings to shaded areas, from early season, you know, the north slopes, and then from there where the food sources that they're going to be, and just hunted it wisely. You know, it's 12 days. How many times do you think you hunted during that 12-day period? And it was primarily focused in and around this buck. I know a couple other hunts were, you know, after a different one, but really, how many days did you hunt to observe deer, what they were doing, and then were like, hey, I'm going to go in. I'm feeling good about this. I'm going to kill.
Right. Seven. There was 6 to 7 days. I was actually thinking about that. I was like, I sat in a tree probably 6 to 7 times this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was. And I don't know if you remember the night we hunted Voodoo. Which
yep.
was a this,
that was,
mistake.
Was that 2 days before?
The night before, I believe.
The night before you killed.
Yeah. You don't even waste stands down there. I mean,
well,
it is.
And that was the daggum thing. We were in between hunting the stand that you killed in the next day and that plot Voodoo. And we saw plenty of deer.
Yeah.
It worked right, but not what we went in there for. But then, yeah, the next night it's like, well, crap.
killed. And you don't hunt Voodoo. We went down in there. By the way, he was down there. I mean, I checked the card down there, which I didn't have the cutting link stretched that far. Now I do, which,
yep.
Not to get off base really quick, but the cutting links that I had up on the whole north side of the property, they were doing their job up there, and I was actually checking cameras less, which let me have quite a few late-night sets in the bottoms and do some other things in the whitetail world. It gave me time, if you will,
sure.
To do a few more things that went into harvesting that deer. But there again, you and I were hunting, and that's what it was with him. I wasn't 100% sure that he wasn't bedding on the north side part of the time and the south side across the road, and you and I went to Voodoo that night, and I'm like, man, he could be right in his wheelhouse. And anyways, you just don't go to Voodoo. There's nothing ever comes good going down there. Just forget hunting down there. When
I won't ever do it again with
misses,
you.
No, it is pointless.
I won't let you convince me.
The thing
me.
About it is, it's one of those places you'll pull the card. You pull the card or the cutting link sending pictures now, and man, the deer are coming through there. And you're like, man, I'm going to go down there and hunt. And
this
it's just
time
one of
it'll
those
be different.
You forget it. And we were talking about, you know, interpreting trail cameras and things like that. I have two spots in particular. One of them is Kick Hollow. We call it Kick Hollow because a good friend of mine, last name of Kick Glider, killed a big 10 point down in the hollow. He was going to go on a date with his girlfriend. I said, dude, are you crazy? you know what the weather is right now? Anyways, long story short, shot a big nice deer. And
is he still with that girl, or is it somebody else?
What was it worth it?
I would hope it would have been worth it for him. I think it was.
Well, it was that girl he was going to go on the date with. Is that the girl that's his wife now?
Yeah, he did marry her, so.
She's a keeper.
Yeah.
So he got the girl and the buck.
Dang. Yeah. I want some of that luck.
There's Kick Hollow and there's Voodoo, and we're talking about trail cameras here, and you check the trail cameras, the Cuddly sending pictures, and you're like, I need to be hunting there. Look at all this activity. Dude, you might as well forget it. There's only one way you're hunting there is if you have a completely still blind and you have a tunnel dug in to it that you can get in. That is the only way you're hunting. You might as well forget it. The cameras look great, but it's
like,
a no-go.
It's like the Bermuda Triangle.
It's awful.
And, you know,
there are a lot of spots like that.
Many turkeys
farms,
as
but
I've...
You know what?
I've never even been to that plot, and I've chased turkeys with you all over that place since probably 2014, and I've never been there.
Don't waste your time.
Yeah,
I can tell you. We chased a bird down there this year, and we got down there to the food plot, tried to call, one time just relocate. Silence. Crickets. It's like, voodoo. Let's get out of here. We're out of here.
Yeah,
we're
gone. Turned around and walked. And how many times have we? There's birds, a goblin right there as we're walking in.
Yeah, just walk right past them.
And we're like, we're walking past. And you're like, why are we walking? I remember back in the early days, you're looking like, why are we walking past? I'm like, trust me, we're walking past. There's no point.
Oh, man.
They will win.
So,
we will lose.
Yeah,
let's keep walking.
So let's go to the night you killed.
So, beautiful night. Condition awesome, high pressure, cool. It was just one of those nights that you just felt deer were going to move. And I don't know, I've had those gut feelings, if you will, that this is the night. I don't use an app that tells me when to hunt or anything like that. I always say if I can go hunting, I'm going to try to go.
There's apps for that?
My motto. Doesn't work for everybody, but it's mine. So, anyway, so we're going in. Feels like a great night. I had left the sticks in that particular spot, and I'd left them there, again, just to recap, because of the drainage that was filled with the acorns. And just what I had seen there prior, I'm like, this is the drain I need to hunt. And the camera, the way the deer were moving. So, great night. And the only problem is with it, the traffic. All the big deer are coming down into this plot, and the traffic there, people wanting to look, people wanting to be a nuisance. I'm talking driving down a 55-mile-an-hour highway, 10 miles an hour at one point. At one point, all the deer are out in the field. I have a one-ton truck with a 16-foot gooseneck. Lock it up. And, I mean, this isn't a place you want to lock stuff up. I'm like, dude, I'm going to film this guy shoot a deer.
Oh, wow.
And he's, I'm like, what in the world? And these deer are becoming accustomed to it. So these were a couple does. I don't know if he couldn't see or anything, but those deer kind of bound off and, I'm like, man, this is just going to be a train wreck and all the people coming by and a handful of them I knew. I'm like, well, that's so-and-so, that's so-and-so. And there are a handful of them that are actually truthfully just looking at deer. And there are a couple of them that may shoot a deer if they do. More than likely, we'll get them on film and hopefully
right.
make an example out of them, which I have done successfully. Twice, and the game warden, we got everything confiscated once, the deer, gun, everything.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of deterred. The other one I caught down there, he was growing marijuana. So cameras are very helpful, not only for the deer, but they're helpful just to manage your property. And I put them big and bold some of them. A lot of them I keep hidden, but some of them we'll put big and bold. But I hand just a couple of them. But anyways.
I think that's my favorite part. I guess I should say this is where I should jump in and say, with each podcast, you get an hour or more, give or take, of us talking about a certain scenario or practice or hunt or whatever. And so you get a lot of the details. But then on each video, because people consume video content differently than they do podcast, you get everything condensed down. You get a very condensed down highlight Cliff Notes version of whatever has occurred.
Whatever actually occurred, yeah.
And for example, you know, we did a turkey hunt this spring where I just cut out all the stale time, the downtime, and just really highlighted the calling. So every time I called, turkey gobbled. And then I condensed the hunt down, which was a 30 to 40 minute hunt, down to I think it was 11 minutes. So I ended up cutting out all the stale time, and it was just the hunts, or just the calling, and the turkey. And so many comments, this guy calls too much. If this guy hunted with me, I'd kick him out. And I'm like, people, I cut out the stale time. You got the calling because that's the turkey gobbling.
You wouldn't have waited around to see the turkey die if I hadn't cut it out.
Yeah. And so on this hunt, your successful deer hunt, there's things that didn't make the cut. And one of them being a big part of the evening, especially, you know, you hear, I think in one point you hear a car drive by, but we cut out so many vehicles. And because a lot of time you didn't point the camera at him and show him because you were filming deer. But there's constant, there's
traffic.
Constant traffic coming down that road. And then even in some post-hunt interviews.
It was a frustrating night.
Yeah, big deer do they make people stupid?
Just stupid.
And it's like if a big deer, you put big deer on social media, you might as well plan on people cutting you down. If you put big deer on your wall or on your own social media or in the newspaper, you might as well plan on people having negative comments. It just goes with the territory so much so that Matt and I are almost annoyed by big deer
envy, and it's like. Yeah. This should be celebrated. This should be rewarded with happiness and joy and not all this negativity. Goodness gracious.
It's just like if you want to achieve big deer, plan on getting the negative with it.
Yeah.
And in this case for you, it was like big deer on the field. Now you have to deal with the people who were stopping and watching.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And truthfully, typically there, we have a better – food plot screen there, more dense.
But we had a weird summer growing, and
we can't. Yeah, we just the drought kind of it hosed us on that, so it's not near as tall. The Milo, obviously, in the Heritage Blend, and a few other things that are really drought resistant did make. But so many other things got browsed too heavily or we just didn't have the rain. So I didn't have that great screen that I typically have just because of the drought. So, I mean, I talked to one guy, which is a neighbor, and he's like, well, that's the only place you can drive by and see big deer. And, I mean, he's not going to shoot a deer off the road. There's not. But he likes to go down there and just look at him. And I'm sitting there thinking, dude, when you hit the brakes, I mean, it makes it harder for me to harvest there. It was just and I'm sure you cut a lot of the video out, but there was a lot of the, I mean, I was pretty upset part of the night. I mean, cause it was like, not only am I looking at the deer, there was some deer behind me, that were in the acorns, but I'm sitting here and I'm filming, I'm looking at deer behind me and I'm looking at vehicles come by me. And at any minute, if they hit their brakes too hard or the brake or the
rumble strip
or whatever, I'm like, which way are these deer? I mean, it was just a really on pins and needles.
And by the way, trying to sell film and trying to deliver a shot. That's a lot going through.
You could definitely tell, you know, you saw turkeys and then you see the deer filtering in, and then at the point that this almost bachelor group shows up, I love the strategy, and you know, you've got a big destination food plot, which aren't fun to hunt because a lot of times you'll see a bunch of deer, but it's hard to get them concentrated into bow range. But you had selected an area where you had a red oak tree dropping acorns, to where when the deer came in, if at any point they decided to go get acorns, that there was really only one area of the field to get it, and that's where you were hunting.
Right, and that was the tree. I learned that was the tree. I've hunted acorns a lot, and a lot of times, and that's due to a saddle. I mean, tree saddle. If you don't have a tree saddles are killing machines. You're so mobile. But I've hunted acorns a lot, and a lot of times you'll get into an acorn flat or an acorn drainage or whatever the acorn is, tree is, and you'll be like, why are they always at that stinking tree right there? I've hunted this three times, and they walk past all these other trees, and they go to that tree. Why is it? I don't know why that is, per se, but I know that it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's like, why do they go to that tree? I don't know, but they're going to that tree. So guess where? I need to be by that tree. And it just so happened that night I could see the sign down in the drainage, and the camera was hot there. And the first night that I hunted it, I was hunted at the tree. And I'm like, man, I'm at the tree. Matt and I had even had the conversation. I'm like, dude, it's trashed with red oak acorns in there. They're there. And anyways, all the deer, as soon as I got up the first night, every deer came to that tree. And what you can't see, a lot of it's in the brush. And I didn't even film a lot of the deer that come up the drain because it's too brushy and eat on the other canopy side that's in the cover of the brush.
Yeah.
So it was the tree. They wanted to come to that tree. They wanted to come out in the food plot there. If they came down the drainage, then a lot of times, like you just mentioned, they would break and either come to it. And he broke and come right to it.
Mm. So he came right to it. And one of the things that I'll note that's interesting about self-filming, I hate self-filming, but you got to a lot of times do it. And in this case, the deer's perfectly broadside, and you can hear you draw back, and then you can kind of see the camera. Like, you can just envision. You've had GoPro troubles, so there's no GoPro, but you can kind of envision what happened. You draw, you go to check the screen, and then you come back to settle the pin, and the deer moves at that time, has moved, and is now slightly quartering to when you shoot. And it's just like, oh, I know exactly. I've spent enough time
angle.
Filming to know that what happened right there was you drew back, you checked the monitor, the deer moved, and you were so focused on settling the pin you didn't notice that the deer took that step. So you shoot him and what appears to be one lung liver, and then of course you hit him, and then you have to deal with all the other traffic that's coming down the road. So that's another thing that didn't make the cut. And then, of course, and the other thing is you'll notice a very short recovery on the video. And just because of the story that happens to a lot of us that we don't like to talk about, and so we just elected to cut it out of the video. But you were fortunate enough to harvest the deer, and we condensed down what happened so you guys can just see a successful hunt and not have to deal with the air of a quartering two shot and a broadhead problem. But anyway, another fun thing that didn't make the cut.
that was just too close to Voodoo.
That's right.
Too close.
I'm sure he ran up towards Voodoo, and then the rest is history, right?
Yeah. Oh man,
right.
I think. Whew, it's another awesome hunt. You know, what did the deer end up scoring?
Man, I didn't get a take on him. He's going to be right around he's going to be a buck. He may surprise me. I know he's going to hit one. My guess is 142, and he may be an inch bigger. He may be an inch smaller.
Gotcha.
He may be 145. I put him in the freezer. His hide went up around the bases when I stuck him down in.
Yep.
And I pulled them back out. I was going to measure them. And long story short, that hide had went up around the
antlers. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you'd have to thaw it out to just get to it.
I couldn't get a tape even around the circumference, and I couldn't even really get a tape down and up around to come around the main beam. I was like, well, I'll just wait on him. But that's where he's going to be, which is a great southern Missouri whitetail in our neck of the woods. Anytime you get one bumping 140s,
a Pope and Young mature buck in the Ozarks is something special.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I was probably more tickled with Trace's. No, I mean, I was happy, but there was with mine, but there was just something about, I don't know.
You've reached that point where it's more fun to see Trace's success than your own.
Yeah, and especially for a deer that we had chased for so long with him, and
that
one that he had hit prior, and it was like shooting with a toothpick when he's pulling 100 or 142 or a
42 pounds.
I'm about to say that.
He's a stout little man.
He's 142 inches, boys.
He's got a full ride to any college football player.
We got him on a draw lock and a
winch. Looking that come along into the blind with you.
You better make a good shot once, son, because we're cocking her back at the house and going in.
Oh, man.
So, anyways, it was just really special. That was a really special hunt. And just kind of getting to be with him. And don't get me wrong, Geronimo's special, too, just because of all the habitat and hard work we had done through the summer and just putting the pieces together. I mean, killing one with a bow is like setting a foot trap for a raccoon. I mean, you've got to have him right there in your wheelhouse. It's not like shooting one with a rifle in a big open field that's chasing a doe. When you're killing one with a bow, you're wanting him in your, I mean, preferably your 30-yard circle. I've taken longer shots, but I want him in that 30-yard circle like a foot trap. That's where I want him, and it takes strategy to get him there.
Yeah,
without a doubt.
Oh,
it's, it's a cool hunt, man, and the way it all comes together, the way he chased acorns, found the resource, got on the deer, made it happen, self-filmed bow hunt, and, man, we're tickled that you were able to get it on film and allow us to share the story, and then you come on the podcast and kind of relive it all, too, for everyone to listen and follow along, and then go check it out on YouTube.
Go check it out, yeah. Yep. Seth, thanks for coming on, buddy.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.